questions about Israel's compliance to the international law and the accountability of its officials. Adel Brahim, Gaza City.
Another Israeli soldier has been killed in Gaza amid the Palestinian resistance against the invading IOF troops. The Israeli military has confirmed the death of the soldier from Golani Brigade in the southern city of Khan Yunis. He was killed on Thursday in an explosion that took place when mines intended to detonate for resistance operation detonated against him. The mines were reportedly intended to demolish buildings used by Palestinian resistance. Earlier, the military wing of Hamas released a video showing an attempt to capture another Israeli soldier who was later killed while trying to escape during the clashes in Gaza. According to the IOF, the death toll among Israeli forces in the Palestinian territory since October 2023 stands at around 900, with nearly 450 of them killed since the start of the regime ground invasion. However, many believe Israel undercounts its fatalities among its troops. Hamas has slammed the recent remarks by Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, which he ruled out the possibility of a comprehensive truce deal for Gaza. The movement said Netanyahu's remarks reflect his malicious and ill-intentioned efforts to block all deals that could lead to the release of Israeli captives and end to the Israeli regime's aggression against Gaza. Hamas added that it had a comprehensive proposal to release all captives at once in exchange for an end to the aggression, full withdrawal of Israeli forces, and the unrestricted flow of aid. Netanyahu, however, turned down that agreement. Hamas also condemned what it described as Netanyahu's attempt to derail the ceasefire process. The movement, however, affirmed its continued commitment to engage positively and responsibly in negotiations aimed at ending the war. Earlier, we spoke with political analyst William Jones about the outlook for ceasefire efforts in Gaza. Here's what he had to say.
Well, Netanyahu's program, obviously, is that ultimately he wants to have a greater Israel. He does not want a Palestinian state at all. Now, that's something that has never been accepted by the world. It is not something that has ever been accepted by the Israeli people over the last 50 years or so. Nevertheless, Netanyahu feels, to the extent that he still has the backing from the United States or the backing from President Trump in moving forward, that he can step by step move in the direction, first of all, of attaining entire control of Gaza. Now he's talking about limiting the Palestinian population to the south of Gaza, but he really wants the whole area. And if he moves in that direction, of course, is going to be the West Bank as well, which he intends to take under his wing. I don't think that will succeed because world opinion is still very strong, not as loud as one would want. You see that also the American population, which has been something of a sleeping giant in many respects with regard to the genocide in Palestine, they also will start to wake up. And I think at that point, this then becomes a different political reality that President Trump has to deal with.
Israeli forces have fatally shot two young Palestinians in the occupied West Bank after they carried out a retaliatory attack that left at least one Israeli soldier dead. The Palestinian Health Ministry identified the men as Mahmoud Abed from Alul and Malik Salim from Brizia, northwest of Nablus. The two men were killed south of Bethlehem, and their bodies have since been seized by Israeli forces. The regime's military said the men carried out a combined shooting and stabbing attack near the Gosh Etzion settlement, killing one security officer and injuring at least four others, some in critical condition. The spokesman for Hamas military wing, the Al-Qassam Brigade, hailed the heroic operation against Israeli forces in the West Bank. Abu Ubaidah described the operation as a response to the aggression that has turned the lives of Palestinians into an unbearable hell. He called on Palestinian youth to escalate resistance throughout the West to stop Israel's plan for annexing the entire territory. And staying in the West Bank, a Palestinian child, Amar Amiye, was fatally shot by Israeli forces on June 23rd in Kufr Malik village, near the West Bank city of Ramallah. Hamiyeh, 13-year-old, was a Thai boxing champion dreaming of representing Palestine on the world stage. But, like many other Palestinian children, his dream was silenced by Israeli bullets. Our correspondent, Naka Ahmed, has spoken to his mother and friends and sent us this report.
In a small village near Ramallah, 13-year-old Amar Hamayel was more than a child. He was a rising star in Muay Thai, also known as Thai boxing. With a heart full of passion and fists trained for glory, Amar dreamed of rising Palestine's flag on the international podiums. But Israeli bullets shattered that dream, ending his life and leaving behind silence where cheers once echoed.
Amar left the house around noon to buy juice. He promised he would be back quickly for lunch. But minutes later, Israeli force opened fire. A bullet hit him in the back. The Israeli intelligence called us and said, "Your son is with us, lightly injured, but he was dying."
As villagers rushed to rescue Amar, the Israeli soldiers held them back. It took over an hour for an ambulance to reach him. By then, the damage was done. Amar died on the way to the hospital.
Everyone in the town tried to reach him, but we were blocked. The ambulance was delayed. The roads were closed. He died in the ambulance. My child, my little man, I still can't believe he's gone.
Amar was the youngest member of his Muay Thai team. Having started at the age of 9, he traveled, trained, and won medals, his eyes always fixed on the future.
Maybe it's forbidden for our children to dream. There is always occupation standing in their way. Amar, my child, was one of them. They murdered his childhood, just like they do with so many others.
Amar's teammates share their feelings too about his martyrdom.
Amar was like a brother to me. When he was martyred, it broke my heart. Life with him was full of laughter. He was like a flower, always dreaming of raising Palestine's name high.
Amar's gloves now rest quietly in a drawer. His medals hang without pride. His dreams were not too big, but the walls, guns, and soldiers that surrounded him were.
Amar Hamayel was not just a boy. He was a future, a fighter, and a dream. And though his last match was stolen, his story will not be forgotten. Naqa Hamid, Kufr Malik, Occupied West Bank.
And now to Yemen, where hundreds of thousands of Yemenis have once again rallied in the northern city of Sa'ada to reaffirm their solidarity with Palestinians amid the genocide in Gaza. The demonstrators carried Yemeni and Palestinian flags, chanting slogans in condemnation of Israeli crimes in Gaza. They denounced the Tel Aviv regime's aggression against Yemen as well. The demonstrators also supported the Yemeni armed forces for their anti-Israel operation. Yemen have been holding pro-Palestine rallies almost every Friday since the beginning of the genocidal war on Gaza in 2023. And to Europe now, where Bosnia is marking the 13th anniversary of the Srebrenica genocide committed by Bosnian Serb forces, which is the deadliest mass killing in Europe since the Second World War. People are gathering at Srebrenica Memorial Center in the eastern Bosnian town to commemorate the genocide. In July 1995, more than 8,000 Muslims were executed and buried in mass graves after Bosnian Serb fighters overran Srebrenica during the final months of the inter-ethnic war in the Balkan country. Around 1,000 people also remain missing. The Srebrenica genocide is compared to the current genocide unfolding against Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. Iranian Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi said on Thursday that if the world had truly learned from Srebrenica, we will not be seeing another genocide against Muslims in Gaza. U.S. President Donald Trump presses ahead with his tariff war, announcing 35% levies on all imports from Canada. In a letter to the Canadian Prime Minister, Mark Carney, Trump said the tariffs will be put into force August the 1st. He pointed out that the new rate is in part caused by the flow of fentanyl from Canada, adding that it may go up if Ottawa retaliates. The 35% tariff is up from the current 25% that Trump imposed last year. In reaction to Trump's announcement, the Canadian premier said his government will continue to defend Canadian workers and businesses in their negotiations with the U.S. Meanwhile, hundreds of people took to the streets in Sao Paulo on Thursday to protest against new tariffs on Brazilian goods announced by Trump.
This tax that Trump is imposing on Brazil is absolutely unacceptable. It goes against our constitution. He's interfering with our sovereignty. We cannot allow this.
It's just another one of his ridiculous stunts. He was going to take over the Panama Canal, he was going to take over Greenland, and he said he'd end all wars in 24 hours. And now he wants to slap a 50% tax on Brazil.
The Brazilian president has vowed to hit back against the U.S. imports with a similar 50% tariff announced by Trump. Earlier this week, Trump sent more than 20 letters to the leaders of other countries, including U.S. trade partners such as Japan and South Korea, outlining new tariffs on goods coming from those nations. And that does bring us to the end of this World News Bulletin. Thank you so much for joining us. Goodbye for now.
English Radio in the month of Muharram presents. Today's special. Every day for 15 minutes.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Salam, dear brother. Salam, dear sister. Thank you very much for joining us. This is today's special from IRIB English Radio. In this episode, we're going to speak about the role of women in Karbala. Ya Umm al-Masa'ib, ya Zayna.
Zainab, eloquent, vibrant Zainab. Zainab, Zainab, brave, defiant Zainab. Zainab, Zainab, silent, tyrant Zainab.
On Friday, and in the studio of Iran Radio, today is 15th of Muharram, 1447 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar. Corresponding to the 20th of Tir, 1404 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 11th of July, 2025 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. At this time, we open Allah's book, the Holy Quran, and we'll listen to verses 6 to 14 of chapter Al-Fajr.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Alam tara kayfa fa'ala rabbuka bi'ad.
Have you not considered how your Lord dealt with Ad?
Iram dhatil 'imad.
With Iram, who had lofty pillars.
Allati lam yukhlaq mithluha fil bilad.
The likes of whom had never been created in the land.
Wa thamud alladhina jabu as-sakhra bil wad.
And with Thamud, who carved out the rocks in the valley.
Wa fir'auna dhil awtad.
And with Pharaoh, owner of the stakes.
Alladhina taghaw fil bilad.
All of whom oppressed within the lands.
فَأَكْثَرُوا فِيهَا الْفَسَادِ.
And increased therein the corruption.
فَصَبَّ عَلَيْهِمْ رَبُّكَ سَوْطَ عَذَابٍ.
So your Lord poured upon them a scourge of punishment.
إِنَّ رَبَّكَ لَبِالْمِرْصَادِ.
Indeed, your Lord is in observation.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
These verses, verses 6 to 14 of chapter Al-Fajr, contain some meaningful oath about the punishment of the transgressors, of which a few powerful ancient nations are referred to, each of which had great authority in their own right, but were arrogant and went astray. They did not believe and disobeyed Allah, and these verses illustrate their painful destiny to show the pagans of Mecca and other similar nations, who were probably much weaker than them, to understand their own status and awaken them from their neglectful sleep.
Ya Hussein, Ya Hussein, Ya Hussein.
again and again we should look, care, and notice about the role of women in Karbala. Today, this is our duty. When the women and children were being paraded as prisoners through the cities, the government's purpose was to hold them up as an example to those who would dare oppose Yazid. They were meant to be a warning to others of the humiliation and punishment that would be meted out to resistors. But Yazid's purpose was thwarted. The fourth Imam, Lady Zainab, and the group of women used their trials and tribulations to awaken the Muslim community from its indifference to evil and matters of leadership. Sheikh Azhar Nasser.
The reason why we know what happened is because of the incredible patience of those women. The reason why we know what happened is because those women made sure that every movement that happened on that day was forever etched in their memory. So tonight, my dear brothers and sisters, I want to speak a little bit about the individual women who made this revolution happen. So the women who surrounded Imam al-Hussein, they played a pivotal role in telling the world, delivering the message of what Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam wanted to achieve. Now oftentimes we think that that's all the women did. They gave those sermons, and that's about it. They just told the masses about what happened. But their presence was even deeper than that. You know, my dear brothers and sisters, women can be some of the most powerful motivators. As a man, if another man tells you to man up, to step up, that's going to give you a little bit of a boost. But if your women folk tell you, man up, it has a different effect.
On the month of Muharram and the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein alayhi salam and his family and companions, be with today's special. Every day from IRIB English Radio. People rise up and mourn. It is Ashura. See the struggle of Hussein in the Kabbalah. Today and in this part again we'll look at Lady Zainab's character. She is an icon and a role model for all of us. The greatness of Zainab al-Kubra's movement is reflected in her remaining sermons. She spoke in a similar tone as her father when he was delivering a speech to his people during his leadership. She spoke using the same kind of words Imam Ali would use. She was equally eloquent and precise, and her words were equally profound. We'll listen to a part of it. O plotters and pretenders, maybe you yourselves were starting to believe that you were following Islam and the Holy Prophet's household, but you failed miserably in the test. You proved to be blind in the sedition and fitna. Do you pledge allegiance while you are planning a conspiracy? You can do nothing but engage in shifting allegiance, hypocrisy, flattery, self-humiliation, and empty talk. Your actions were different from your words.
during this month, the month of Muharram, you can see the commemoration of Imam Hussein, peace be upon him, in a form of azadari, or mourning gatherings, until the time of Ghaybat al-Kubra, or major occultation of our last Imam, Imam Mahdi, may Allah hasten his reappearance. We find that our Imams always encourage Azai Hussein. They sign Azai Hussein not only a demonstration of grief for Imam al-Hussein and the martyrdoms of Karbala, but also a renewal of one's commitment to Allah and his laws as expounded in the Holy Quran and Ahadith. We have records of the sayings of the representatives during Ghaybat al-Sughra, or minor occultation of Imam Mahdi, peace be upon him, explaining and encouraging Azai Hussein. Mourning gatherings, mourning moments for Abu Abdullah al-Hussein. From 329 AH onwards, the ulamas took it upon themselves to perpetuate the message of Karbala. Sheikh al-Saduq was the first scholar to have introduced prose as medium of conveying the message of Imam al-Hussein. His speeches have been preserved, and to this they are known as the Amali, or dictations of Sheikh Saduq.
And therefore, one of the most important roles that the women played in Karbala and in other cities is that they raised the morale of those men who wanted to support Imam al-Hussein. If they saw any weakness, they gave them that feminine nudge, just like Dulhem did when Zuhair ibn al-Qayn was unsure about whether to join Hussein. She didn't need to act like a man, because femininity is not a weakness. All she had to do was look at him and say, "Zuhair, the grandson of the Prophet calls you and you don't respond." 10 men could have lectured him about joining Hussein, but all it took was his wife to nudge him for him to join Abi Abdullah and write his name on the list of Shuhada of Karbala. That's power. That's a lot of power, dear brothers and sisters. Raising the morale. Some of the women had so much love for Imam al-Hussein that they actually participated in the battle. One woman was so overcome by what she was witnessing that she lost herself in that moment and entered the battlefield. And we'll speak about what Imam al-Hussein said to her.
We ask you, dear brother and sister, to remember us in your prayer, the light moments with your Lord. Thank you very much, and may Allah accept all your good deeds and azadaris and mourning gatherings for Abu Abdullah al-Hussein, peace be upon him. Thank you for listening to today's special, and fi amanillah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible? By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من، این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي ارسل رسوله بالهدى.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
وَالَّذِي أَرْسَلَ رَسُولَهُ بِالْهُدَى وَدِينِ الْحَقِّ لِيُظْهِرَهُ عَلَى الدِّينِ كُلِّهِ وَلَوْ كَرِهَ الْمُشْرِكُونَ.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش، با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد، اینها چیزایی لازم نیست.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran. Quran.
Bazaar.
If you look around, nearly every object you see is made of raw material extracted from a mine. Basically, if you can't grow it, you have to mine it. The extraction of minerals, metals, and fuels from the ground is one of humankind's oldest industries. Never more than now has society been so dependent on greater variety and larger volumes of mined products. So it's no surprise that mining fuels our modern world and makes economies grow. Hello and welcome to another edition of Bazaar. I'm your host Ali Reza Ikhtiarzadeh, and this week we will be exploring the mining industry while shining the spotlight on the machinery used in this sector. We wanted to see what types of machines are used and who is actively manufacturing them. Plus, we wanted to understand why the mining sector is crucial to the national economy and how manufacturers contribute to its progress. So, let's roll out the show. Our quest for answers led us to Shahrud city in Semnan province, where we visited a company specializing in manufacturing various mining machines. With nearly 20 years of experience, this knowledge-based company is active in a host of fields. It conducts research, development, and production of equipment needed in various industries. That being said, it also manufactures a variety of excavating, drilling, trenching, and digging machines. The life of any product begins in the design room. This company has researched and developed these machines and has perfected their performance. Optimizing the machine's size, speed, and power to carry out tasks has also reduced the expenses related to projects where these machines are used. These machines can be used in agriculture and road maintenance, among other medium-scale construction projects. Most materials needed to make these machines can be purchased inside Iran. Steel sheets, gears, wires, and whatever else is required to build the machine can be domestically found. And if a design requires a particular part, this company can make its own molds to create the parts. You might find it interesting that these machines are currently imported, as there is a high demand among mining companies for equipment. So indigenizing the production of mining machines has been a big step towards supporting this sector. Another benefit to local production is it saves the country millions by cutting back on imports. The beating heart of this knowledge-based company is its research and development department. Here is where all the magic happens. This area employs some of the most talented and experienced specialists to research, design products, and optimize existing ones. But that's not all. The research and development department also studies future projects. This company also dabbles in making equipment used to harness renewable energy. This company not only uses its own expert staff, but also stays up to date on the latest knowledge by maintaining links with the Industrial University of Shahrud. It collaborates with academic institutions and exchanges knowledge with them too. Furthermore, this knowledge firm also uses capacities and resources made available by Semnon Tech Park. Among its services, it offers the execution of projects through contracting. For example, it has used its machines to complete piping and installation of telecommunications manholes for intercity networks. Another example is carving drainage systems in agricultural fields using its trenchers. Over the years, this company has made a variety of award-winning machines, such as drilling machines equipped with fiber optic lights. Moreover, this company has invented 6 products that have been internationally patented. This knowledge-based manufacturer has never stopped eyeing the future and has plans to expand its production units and product portfolio in the coming years. The company we just mentioned is part of the puzzle that helps Iran's mining sector thrive. It is one of Iran's key industries, as the country is one of the top 10 mineral-rich nations globally. Roughly 7% of global mineral reserves can be found in Iran, making it one of the most important mineral producers in the world. Numbers from Iran's Trade Promotion Organization show that last year the sector saw a growth in exports. Government officials, however, say export figures could still be much higher. Furthermore, efforts have been placed on encouraging research and production in knowledge-based firms to increase specialized production, such as mining machines, in the market. And here is where knowledge-based companies play a big role. Okay, time for me to take a little break from here and divert your attention to a report that I made earlier in the week. Everyone, welcome to another special feature of Bazaar. Today, we are discussing energy production, specifically electricity production through gas turbines and some of the problems that come with it. So, at different times of the year, mainly during the summer, we get sporadic blackouts at peak hours, at one of the peak hours, let's say around 12 at noon until 4 to 5 p.m. Because we cannot store electricity, electricity production must always match electricity consumption. But because of the temperature during these hours, during this time of the year, during the summer, temperature, high temperatures in particular, negatively affect electricity production through gas turbines. So first we're going to take a look at, well, why that is and how gas turbines work. But and also, we believe that we have found a solution at Sharif Innovation Center in one of the companies that has made that solution, and we're going to check that out too. Why do high temperatures negatively affect the performance of a gas turbine? Well, bear with me as I try to explain how a gas turbine works through this prototype that they have here. This is the prototype of the device that would be used at scale. This is not at scale. So this is, imagine this is the gas turbine. How it works is that it sucks air through these air ducts, and the temperature of that air is very important. I'm going to get back to that. The air goes through a compressor here. The compressor compresses the air, which we would need the compressed air for the combustion chamber. A combustion chamber essentially makes this work exactly like a plane engine or a car engine. A car engine is slightly different because the movement that it produces is linear, whereas the plane engine has rotary movement. So that's exactly what it is like, because it produces rotary movement. So in the combustion chamber, we add a certain type of gas to the compressed air, and then a little spark creates an explosion, and the explosion, the high pressure air, would then spin our turbines. And the turbines, which have movement in them, are connected to a generator, and the generator's job is to turn movement into electricity, which goes through the power grid and then gets to whoever needs it. Now, the thing here, the important thing about the air temperature is that we need ideal conditions, ideally, for the machine to work at peak performance. And that ideal condition is at sea level, 15 degrees Celsius. So the air, ideally, is 15 degrees Celsius, but we don't get that kind of temperature in a lot of places, especially in a hot and dry climate. So we have a couple of options to alleviate that problem. Number one, the inefficient option is to work the compressor a lot more, which would use a lot more energy, but that's not even the issue. The issue is that there's a lot easier of a way. So what they have found at TEPCO company is that they have instead tried to use an ice storage unit to work as a thermal storage compartment, because the thermal storage capacity of ice is 100 times more than that of the water. So here they create ice essentially at midnight until the morning when no one is using the power, and the air is colder because that is what happens. The difference between temperatures during the day and temperatures during the night in dry climates is pretty massive. So it's a lot easier to create the ice during that time. So they do that so that in the morning or at noon during peak hours, 12 p.m. to like 4 or 5 p.m., they have the ice to cool the water that is in the storage, and the cooled water goes through a radiator behind the air duct so that the air, the probably hot air, that comes through the chamber is cooled using the water that is in the ice storage compartment. That water cools the air down to like 15 degrees and gives us ideal conditions to work with. So the compressor doesn't need to work that hard. We get our ideal conditions through the ice storage unit. And that is how they are able to offset the amount of electricity that we would lose if we were to use the compressor a lot harder. And that's pretty much how a gas turbine works as well, but also this is the innovation here. A better way to cool the air and get a gas turbine to work at peak performance. There are other less efficient methods of cooling the water that comes through the chamber. Both of them are called evaporative cooling. The first type is done through a wet media, most likely a cooling pad that you see in water coolers everywhere. So how it works is that there's a lot of surface and they run water through it, and the air is going to go through this cooling pad. So as the air goes through the cooling pad, the water absorbs the heat from the air and evaporates. Evaporation is an endothermic procedure, which is heat absorbing, which means that the heat is absorbed from the air and transferred to the water, which evaporates, making the air that runs through the cooling pad a lot cooler. This is a rather wasteful method because, well, you're using water, because in the method that I showed you, you don't use water. The water is just circulated back into the system. This one, you use water, and it's just generally not that efficient. The other method is even more inefficient. You see it in a lot of places in like outdoors restaurants. They spray water through the air that is going to go through the chamber, and the extremely tiny water droplets absorb the heat from the air and evaporate as they are sprayed. This also absorbs heat from the air, and that is why when you go through the spray of water, you feel a cool breeze, because the air is a lot cooler, because its heat is transferred to the water molecules. So both of these methods are pretty inefficient, and I just wanted you to know about other methods that are used, but they are definitely more inefficient. And the chart is a demonstration of how our thermal storage system would perform in an actual 400 megawatt hour power plant system. When the ice is getting used during in midday, it bumps up the production by a difference of 60 megawatts in a regular 400 megawatt hour power plant. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Thank you for tuning in. It's bye for now.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,710 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent. On FM, 91.5 megahertz for Iran. You can also listen to the English channel of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. You can also listen to the radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our radio quality and other means.
Wherever this hour finds you, welcome. You're listening to Space Where Sound Meets Soul. Good evening to all of our listeners. This is Iran Radio from Tehran. Nice to have you with us. We start off this hour's program with Hadith of the Day. This program presents a Hadith from the Holy Prophet and members of his household, Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them, along with a brief explanation and commentary on the Hadith. Then it is time for our radio productions feature. After that, we have Leader's Speech, presenting an English translation of a selection of the statements and speeches of the Honorable Leader of the Islamic Revolution. Spotlight is going to highlight everything that is going on around in the world today. So let's just get to Spotlight and to see what's offering today.
Here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more.
You are listening to the program Hadith of the Day,
on Iran Radio with Sheikh Danish, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Salam and welcome to this episode of the Hadith of the Day. Dear brothers and sisters, God bless your tears in this month for Imam Hussein alayhi salam. And are you ready to listen to a hadith from Imam Hussein alayhi salam himself about crying for him? He says, "I am the martyr of tears. No believer remembers me except that they cry." So why do we cry for Hussein alayhi salam? Why does every heart tremble at the name Karbala? Is it just history? Just tragedy? No. It's something deeper, something planted in the soul of every believer. Because Hussein is not just remembered, Hussein is felt. Hussein is not just remembered, Hussein is felt. The Arabic word abra or abara doesn't just mean a tear. It refers to a tear that carries meaning, memory, and movement of the heart. So when Hussein alayhi salam says, "Ana qatilul abara," I am the martyr of the tear, he's not asking for your sadness. He's describing a reality. If your faith is alive, if your heart still beats for truth, you cannot hear his name without your eyes responding. That's a very beautiful connection, huh? Science shows us that emotional tears are different. They release stress hormones, regulate emotions, and trigger a biochemical response of relief and connection. According to studies published in Psychology Today and Howard Medical School, crying is one of the body's ways of processing deep moral emotions. Now ask yourself, what emotion runs deeper than watching a man stand in front of thousands of swords for the sake of God, dignity, and truth? Hussein's sacrifice breaks you, but in that breaking, you remember who you are. Who you are, who you are. Let's be clear. The tears of Muharram are not just grief, they are awakening. When you cry for Hussein, you are saying, "I still know the difference between justice and tyranny. I still feel the pain of the Prophet's family. I still carry the weight of what happened in Karbala." So these tears don't weaken you, they clean you. They align you with the values of the Ahlul Bayt, and they tell the world, "We are still with Hussein. We are still with Hussein, with truth, with divine beauty." Imam Rida alayhi salam said, "Whoever remembers our tragedy and weeps, even the size of a fly's wing, paradise becomes guaranteed." Because those tears are proof that your heart is still alive. And the heart that cries for Hussein alayhi salam can never support injustice. It can never forget the Prophet. It can never become numb. So if you cried for Hussein alayhi salam even once, know this: you have fulfilled the Prophet's hope. You've joined the prayer of the angels, and you've answered Hussein's alayhi salam call. Because Hussein is not just a memory. He is the pulse of this ummah. Every tear is proof that we are still his. Inshallah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
You just listened to the program Hadith of the Day on Iran Radio with Sheikh Danish, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allah.